Welcome back to Out of This World. I'm Jamie Hanshaw, and I'm so excited for the first time we've got Courtney Turner, my good friend, who we've done several appearances with and shows and live shows, and she is my dear, sweet friend. Welcome, Courtney.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
I know, this is your first time on my channel, and we'd really get out of this world talking about theosophy and the UN.
Yes. So I've been recently kind of like diving in. I'm by no means any kind of expert on theosophy. I'm no, you know, biblical scholar either, but I'm really seeing how relevant it is right now. I did a show on the UN and I called it Black Money Magic and the New World Order. And I traced the roots of Lucius Trust and Alice Bailey. And everything is just right out in the open. Like they have a whole website and she talks about her arcane school and her, you know, the origins of the Lucius Trust. And they have these festivals that's like a week long, and it's a festival of world servers. So this is right there at the world servers, which is very much priming for the global citizens. So I've just been kind of tracing and tracking like what's going on with the UN. And I've been following what they're doing now with it looks like they're creating a cyber Satan, you know, their UN Centennial. Yes. The AI World Society. And I just did a show on that. And it's really they need a one world religion for all of this to work. Mm-hmm. And theosophy seems to be the conduit for all of it. So I've been kind of tracing, I like to go to the roots of things. So I've been going all the way back to the Neoplatonists. And that's taken up quite a bit of my time, actually, trying to understand them. Because they all say the same thing, but they like to pretend that they have these nuanced differences between each other. Mm-hmm. You see that with the Theosophical Society itself, too. You know, there's a Blavatsky, and then she has the Ledbetter and all these people who supposedly had different schools of thought. But when I look at it, it all looks kind of the same. It really all just looks Luciferian. I don't really know how else to put it.
You well,
know,
it doesn't look that way. It is is that way in their own words. So let's just go back to kind of the beginning of this way of thinking. So theosophy is basically all of the world's religions smushed up in a ball.
Yes.
Right. And with some kooky sprinkles on top. And when this started was just a little bit after the Civil War. So it doesn't feel like that far away, but it does feel like that far away. So
1875 is when the Theosophical Society was formed.
Right. And so you've got Madame Blavatsky. She's kind of the front face of this in the beginning. And we're going to show you tonight that theosophy is actually the mystery religion of Babylon brought back from the dead.
She says that.
Yes,
that's very much what she says. You know, she talks about how she wants to revive the ancient mystery schools and the ancient teachings of she calls it the ancient wisdom, but that they knew how to channel, and she wants to bring that back. So
yes,
yeah.
And so from there, we get things like eugenics. We get things like anti-Semitism. We get things like Tiny Mustache Man, and things that you think are totally benign and secular, like the United Nations. You think that all of these world leaders are just like convening to make peace in the world and they hash out problems, but that's not really what they do. They're doing rituals, they're doing moon meditations, they're doing woo-woo, they're doing secret think tanks to guide culture and culture creation. They make a propaganda. So this is what they say theosophy is. They say it is the archaic wisdom religion, the esoteric doctrine once known in every ancient country, having claims to civilization. This wisdom, all the old writings show us as an emanation of the divine principle, and the clear comprehension of it is typified in such names as the Indian Buddha, the Babylonian Nebo, the Thoth of Memphis, the Hermes of Greece, in the appellations also of some goddesses, Metis, Nithya, Athena, the the Gnostic Sophia, and finally the Vedas, from the word to know. And so this is the answer to the question, what is theosophy? So like I said, it's all of those things stuck together, right? Yeah. Oh, and here's their logo. So let me know if you can find some familiar symbols in there. So you've got your six-pointed star right there, the alchemical star. and then you've got the Om. And then you've got the swastika, the tiny mustache man. You've also got the Ouroboros going on here. So a lot going on. And this is the kind of stuff that influenced the tiny mustache man party.
Yeah, he was very influenced by her secret doctrine in particular, right? And her other one was the Isis Unveiled.
Yes, secret doctrine and Isis Unveiled. And that is what we talk about a lot, the goddess. And that goddess also, if when you hear about goddesses, they're not that very far apart. They all tend to blend into each other. So Isis is like Kali, is like Scarlet Woman, is like Whore Babylon, Diana, all of those, Ishtar and Nana, the different names for the same entity, right?
Yes. Yeah. And when you said it's Luciferian, I have actually a couple of quotes directly from her.
Okay.
She says, Lucifer represents life, thought, progress, civilization, liberty, independence. Lucifer is the logos, the serpent, the savior. That was on pages 71 through, in her volume 2. Mm-hmm. And then she says, it is Satan who is the god of our planet and the only god. And then she also says, the celestial virgin, which thus becomes the mother of gods and devils, is at one and the same time, for she is the ever-loving, beneficent deity. But in antiquity and reality, Lucifer or Luciferus is the name. Lucifer is divine and terrestrial light, the Holy Ghost and Satan at one and the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's very close to a quote that I pulled out of Secret Doctrine also. It says, one of the most hidden secrets involves the so-called fall of angels. Satan and his rebellious hosts will thus prove to have become the direct saviors and creators of divine man. Thus, Satan, once he ceased to be viewed in the superstitious spirit of the church, grows into the grandiose image. It is Satan who is the god of our planet and the only god. Satan or Lucifer represents the centrifugal energy of the universe, this ever-living symbol of self-sacrifice for the intellectual independence of humanity. So they're saying right there, we worship Satan, full stop. Lucifer, Prometheus, whatever you want to call it, is the true god of theosophy.
Yes. And I think that they talk about, you were saying, it's like all these religions mushed into one. And I think that, you know, that's what we're seeing right now. The interfaith movement, the integralist movement.
Mm-hmm. Chrislam.
Yes. And I'm seeing, so I've been watching some of, are you familiar with the World Parliament of, the Parliament of World Religions?
Somewhat.
Okay, so this started in 1893. That was like, it was in Chicago at the World Fair. And that was the first kind of, proposal for that there should be this World Parliament of Religions. And then it was in 1993 that they did their first, where now they've been doing these annual meetings. Mm. And so it's Robert Mueller, who's been one of the kind of guys like helming this and talking about how we have to have these interfaith meetings and interfaith religions. And these, I've been watching just like clips from some of these videos, like of the, you know, and they're pretty scary. but some of the things they talk about are like that. And this is, you know, I've always thought this, but to see this, you know, actually being said by them is really interesting. They talk about how it's one of the reasons why things like ayahuasca is so important, because it helps bring this sense of the oneness. And that's part of, you know, they keep talking about how there are no individuals, there's no, there's no separation. It's all one, everything's one. And our whole journey is about, you know, reconnecting to the one, and that the divine is within us, that there, it's not the creator, it's within each of us. So it's a very Gnostic principle as well. But yes, the ayahuasca helps people to access this and to understand this. So I thought it's very interesting, because it's definitely a great brainwashing tool, and they've talked about that. but it's also a great tool to help convince people to be theosophists. So.
Exactly. And have you seen that girl who's going viral with all the dreadlocks, and she's yes. like covered in moss, and she's singing about pyramids and aliens helping her?
Yes.
That foolishness is what they're trying to push on humanity, because in order for the culmination of their alchemical process, and what they think is that people are going to either be spiritual or they're going to be recycled. Okay. Mm-hmm. Take it's that to mean whatever. Yes.
They believe in reincarnation. Yeah.
You will be thrown into the pot and recycled if you do not match up to their spiritual standards of the UN, which is saying that we think that Lucifer is the light of the world. So let's go back kind of to Blavatsky. Now, I'm not an expert on her life, but I have watched some documentaries and read some things, you know, about kind of like where she gets these ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's a kooky place, right? From hidden masters in the Tibetan mountains, like the Himalayas, yeah. who sit up there and meditate all day long, and they run things through proxy people, and they visit people through astral projection.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So it's like the super friends, okay? Like all of these ascended masters, they think Jesus was one, they think Buddha was one, they think Krishna was one. So they're all just like loaded.
And then they tried to make what was his name? Krishnamurti? Yes, Krishnamurti. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he kind of rejected it, actually. He was like, oh, I'm kind of done with you.
He did.
I mean, still a new age leader, but yeah.
Krishnamurti became like a nothing burger. And so if you guys like this show tonight, you can also go over to Rockfin and watch the one that I did called Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, which goes very deep mm-hmm. into all of this and what the rainbow flag symbolizes. And it isn't just about gay pride. It is actually the symbol of the hidden masters and the seven rays,
yeah, the seven rays.
Call it of the prism or the
soul rays.
Of light. Yes.
Yeah. The soul rays.
So
that's actually where they get that's one of the spinoffs of theosophy. Mm-hmm. The I Am Church.
Yes.
Because seven threes is the from Saint Germain. And it's actually also, I think, the really earliest iteration would be I Am Bilicus, the Neoplatonist philosopher. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I actually have seen their passion play in Mount Shasta, the I Am Foundation.
Okay.
So the entire town of Mount Shasta is this cult almost, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't wear black or red ever. And they all wear the same color on the same day. And I only found this out by just like being a tourist there. I'm like, how come everyone's wearing green in town today? And they're like, oh, we wear green on Wednesdays and then we wear blue on this day, however they do it. I was like, oh, okay, weird. And then so we just happened to be there in the summer when they do this entire life of Jesus, which is played by the man that they call Saint Germain, right? Yeah. Who yeah. they think is one of these ascended masters yes. who has lived for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes. They and essentially channel them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even in vampire lore, Saint Germain is hanging in there. Like I've seen them reference him in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and things like that. So
really?
He's in pop culture. But yeah, Saint Germain is one of those characters. And they do have like their own icons that are looking like... They kind of like anime and Byzantine combined. It's really bizarre. And they have like really big blue eyes and blonde hair. So that's where you get these ideas of the Aryans and the white master race, right?
Yes. Yes. That was one of Blavatsky's ideas. That's what influenced Hitler.
Yeah.
Or Mustache Man. Yeah.
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 So, okay, let's go back to Blavatsky. So tell me kind of, let's piece together her life for a second, because to me, it seems like she's just like a carnival con man, but yes. she's also in touch with some demonic entities because she can make things happen. What do you think?
Yeah, well, actually, she was like outed as a fraud. By the British Psychical Society and also in India. They both mm-hmm. like outcasted her and determined her a fraud. Let me find my notes on Blavatsky.
So she's traveling around while you look. I'll just kind of So she kind of is eschewing the traditional religions, and she goes on this eat, pray, love adventure where she visits India, she visits Egypt, she visits America, she gets in all of these adventures. You know, she's on like boats that sink, and she's one of the only survivors. And so she is on this crazy journey. And she's also learning how to be a spiritualist. So in these times, like right after the Civil War, up until maybe like the Atomic Age, spiritualism was huge. You know, crystal balls, yeah, seances, speaking to the dead, psychics, tarot cards. It was a magical revival in this way. And it is rife with con men because people want to believe in the woo-woo. And it's not hard to produce an effect like a Hollywood effect back in the day. And then they believe that it's ghosts rapping on the table or whatever is happening. So in my opinion, I think she is in contact with demons and she is doing carnival magic. So it's like both and. What do you think?
I would agree. I think she was a very unhappy person. It sounds like she was, and that's what they say, like she died alone and kind of ill and, you know, very unhappy. She was married for 3 months and then went on her whole, like, you know, voyage where she travels the world. And she was very taken with the, ancient Tibetan religions and the spiritual leaders there. And then she actually moved to India for a while. Her and Alcott, who was a lawyer who started the Theosophical Society with her. He was a veteran of the Civil War. And he was also, it was interesting because he was like a special investigator into the corruption of the armed services. And he seemed very like noble, but right. And then he was a member that of the commission that was appointed to investigate the assassination of President Lincoln. So the two of them like go and they leave and they go to India and they set up the Theosophical Society there. That was 3 years after they started the Theosophical Society in New York. It actually started in New York City. Their headquarters are in Adyar. I don't know how you say it. Adyar? Adyar, probably. In India. And but they talk about how she, and most of what I was reading was how she, I mean, her influences and what she, you know, all the offshoots. It was like the Rosicrucians are offshoots of the Theosophists, the Order of the Golden Dawn, the obviously Alice Bailey, the Arcane School, Rudolf Steiner, which is the Anthroposophical Society. And then the Anji Yoga Society was also an offshoot. She talks about how she like essentially channels all these spirits, and they gave her access to all of this ancient wisdom, and that essentially, you know, everything is, she didn't reject any religions, that all religions were accepted, including, you know, all the secular. And this is really interesting because it's something that you keep hearing. I mean, when they talk about the tenets of theosophy, they talk about like the perfectibility of human nature. This is very much what Adam Weishaupt believed.
Yes. They were called the perfectibilists.
Yes. Right. They were called the perfectibilists. So they believe that she came up with like several, founding propositions for the Theosophical Society. So I'll see if I can find those two. I seem to have everything all scattered. So, okay. They call them secret chiefs or disembodied ascended ass masters.
Ascended ass masters.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes, because they're very interested in your butthole.
Oh, that disturbed me so much.
Yeah.
Yes, when you sent me that was beyond disturbing. But yes, and she was a huge influence on Crowley as well. this also I thought was really interesting too. So they, when, and this goes all the way back to the Neoplatonists, they had, so they had like, and this was from, it was relayed by Plotinus, because Plotinus was one of the only ones who did the writing. A lot of them, it was that because it was all supposed to be kept in secret and only done through oral teachings. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really influenced, because then when I looked at Blavatsky's, you know, beliefs and her teaching, it's all coming from really, and what the Neoplatonists were saying. I think it's just an extension of this. And the Neoplatonists, I feel like, this is just my interpretation from what I've read, but it seemed like this was at the time. So obviously Plato was 400 years before Christ. So Christianity was not on the scene. This wasn't, you know, he wasn't aware of Christianity at the time. But when the Neoplatonists were on the scene, Christianity was emerging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was, they saw it as a competition and competing schools of thought. And so they were trying to revive the ancient mysteries, because through these ancient, essentially through secret societies, they could maintain power. And, you know, they, so he had these three different means of degrees, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it was the neophytes, it was the initiates, and then the masters. Mm-hmm. And I think this is very much where the Freemasons get their structure from.
And wasn't Blavatsky a Freemason?
She was.
Yeah.
She was a co-Freemason, one of the few, you know, female Freemasons.
Yes. And that
I think Blavatsky, I think her disciple as well, Bailey, because her husband Foster, so she was considered like an honorary Freemason as well.
And that was big during the French Enlightenment era, was co-masonry, right? Because everything has to be equal and libertine, right?
Yes.
So what we're getting at here tonight is that the UN is a world religion, and its head is Lucifer. And we are going back in time to try and prove to you that, you know, in their own words, in their own art, in their own symbolism, in their in their NGOs, they are bringing about the new age of Aquarius. So their medical arm is the WHO. Their banking arm is the IMF World Bank. Their educational arm is UNESCO.
Yes.
And oddly enough, UNESCO is one of the sponsors of the ride at Disneyland called Small World. It's a small world after all, right?
Yeah. Yes, yes. And it makes perfect sense. And I've done a lot of work on the origins of the modern education system, and that has complete occult ties. You know, it's the Order of Skull and Bones pretty much exported the Americanization of Wundt. Wilhelm Wundt was very much a Hegelian. Hegel is absolutely a theosophist. You know, he's a hermeticist. He's an alchemist, definitely a Gnostic. And he was very influenced, actually, by the Neoplatonists and by Boheme, Jacob Boheme, who we get the term the Bohemian, right? Bohemian Grove.
Bohemian Grove, Bohemian. Yeah.
Yes. And that's from Jacob Boheme. But the Order of Skull and Bones, there's a lot of connections to the Illuminati. And I would argue these are all just offshoots of the original mystery schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you could say that's a reductionistic oversimplification, but in terms of their worldview, and even when you start to look at how these, because a lot of them had to go underground, and you saw that even with, you know, I'm looking even from the little writings we have of the Neoplatonists, they talk about how they had to go underground.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that they start rebranding, they create these offshoots, and, you know, they just have a new bow for the same outfit. And, but the Order of Skull and Bones very much took over the, exportation of the education systems, where how we got the, you know, Prussian model exported to the United States, and it was all to breed compliance. We did a show on this, breed mindless obedient compliance, but it's very much through occultism, and UNESCO was definitely at the helm of all of that. So yeah, the UN is definitely
it's a religion. You know, it's not just a bunch of boring diplomats sitting there falling asleep. You know, when you think of the UN, you just think of this place where everybody is like gathered and they have the translators and they're just like hashing out these problems. But no, it's getting weird. So let's talk about Alice Bailey for a second, because she and her writings is really what is the ultimate foundation of what you were talking about. Lucifer Trust, it was called. Mm-hmm. And then it was called Lucius Trust because Lucifer was too...
It was Lucifer Publishing. And then two years later, they changed it to Lucifer Trust.
Yeah. So when Alice was about 15, she was home alone. She decided to stay home from church, and her family went to church. And she was sitting in her room, and a tall stranger dressed in very fancy European clothes and a turban came into her room and told her she had work to do in the world. So I'm thinking, what, remember that character from Harry Potter, the very first one, who had like Voldemort in the back of his head and he had to wear a turban?
Oh, yeah.
So that's who I'm like picturing is visiting Alice Bailey when she's 15 years old, saying, you have been chosen to foment this new world religion, but the master, he told her she had to learn self-control and how to be more pleasant.
Yes. And it's so interesting because I find it really interesting, by the way, that a lot of these theosophists were Christian and rebelled against Christianity. Like mm-hmm. even one of the first Neoplatonists, Adominus Sacca, which meant Saccas was the like sack bearer. But he was also, and he rejected it, and they were rebelling, basically, the teachings they grew up with. Mm-hmm. But she said one of the masters, Alice Bailey, said one of the masters came to her and told her that it was her path in life, that she was the one who was going to bring about the one world religion, and this mm-hmm. was her job, and that was the aim and the goal and the pursuit of the Masons, and that she was the one who was going to be able to do it. And it looks like that's exactly what's going on with the UN. She's carrying out the plans for the ascended master.
Because Masonry is, also an amalgam of different religions. You can be any religion, they say, and also be a Mason. But, you know, our church does not allow you to do that. It's one of the only places that they say you cannot be a Mason and a Christian at the same time.
Yeah.
But according to the Masons, you can. Okay, so she turns away from her, you know, religion. She learns her self-control. She tries to be more pleasant. She turns 22, and then she talks about a mysterious light came into her room mm-hmm. and spoke to her in the same voice as the man with the turban who visited her when she was 15 and told her that the United States is a feminine civilization.
Yes.
Is that interesting?
I thought that was very interesting.
And the real founders were the Pilgrim Mothers. Okay, so now we're getting back to goddess worship. We're talking about Washington, D.C., which stands for District of Columbia. And you guys all ought to know that Columbia is a goddess.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Symbolized by a dove. She's usually pictured with like a Phrygian cap and some patriotic type clothes. I'm going to do a show on Rockfin about the architecture of DC, and we're going to talk about Columbia in there. But so these hidden masters are telling Alice Bailey that the US is a feminine civilization and she needs to become a student of the occult. And I wonder if this is her, or I'm getting it mixed up. She was married once and he beat her really bad and she left him. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's part of why she was so taken with Annie Besant, because she, they.
Or maybe that's Annie's story.
It might be Annie Besant.
Oh, okay. Think,
yeah, because she was one of the ones who helmed the feminist movement.
That's her. Okay, so. Yes. Alice Bailey and Annie Besant are two other names in theosophy that are, so they've got Blavatsky, Alice, and Annie. Alice married Foster Bailey, who was also a Freemason.
He was a Freemason.
He was the national secretary of the Theosophical Society. Mm-hmm. And then Alice made contact with an entity called the Tibetan. So you wonder why they're pushing yoga, they're pushing mm-hmm. Hindu, they're pushing Buddha, all the girls are in yoga pants and meditating. This is why, because it's part of the Aquarian conspiracy.
Yes, and the Aquarian, so this is also really interesting because, again, goes back to the whole oneness, right? So the age of conspiracy, the age of the Aquarian, I'm thinking of the Aquarian conspiracy, but it's the idea that everything is one and that we are, and that the heightened emotionality, and it's the antithesis of the Leo. This is what they believe. And the mm-hmm. Leo represents the hyper-individuality. So they talk about this a lot. And how they want to bring about the age of Aquarius. I think I have the quote too on this, but that's one of the things that they talk about a lot in the Lucius Trust, that they want to bring about. And they scrubbed a bunch of it. I had some of the screenshots in the show I did on Lucius Trust, but they've scrubbed a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. But they had a whole page on, it was on the UN website, about the age of Aquarius and how they're ushering in the age of Aquarius. Let me see if I can find this quote.
Someone just sent me this. So the Supreme Council of the 33rd in Washington, D.C. used to have a magazine called The New Age. New Age magazine.
Wow.
And a lot of their articles and things are very weird. When we visited this Supreme Council of the 33rd in D.C. in 2012, guess what kind of books we found?
What did you find?
OTO.
Oh.
Yeah. So they have an enormous library, an occult library, and featuring books from the sex magic cult of Crowley and Kenneth Grant, the OTO, right there in their shelves.
Wow. Wow. So the age of, we're shifting to the age of Aquarius. Aquarius has to do with the good of the group, personal detachment, and concern for the eclectic whole. This is why you keep hearing, and this is what's driving, this whole religion is driving all of the like DEI, the ESG, under the guise that it's for, the good of the whole, and that we're, the eclectic whole, as they call it.
The Borg.
And
then they
say, the what?
The Borg.
Yes.
Right.
And then there, the opposite would be the Leo, which believes in the individual sovereignty, passionate feelings, ability to decide for oneself the appropriate course of action. And so they really want to usher in the age of the Aquarius because they want it to be where we don't have any personal sovereignty, mm-hmm. where there's no, there are no nations, there's no individuals, there's no individual religions, it's all one. You're really seeing when they talk about the AI world society, they say that there will be no human government. It's mm-hmm. all going to be run by AI. So it's essentially going to be this one centralized hub. They want that hub to be in Ukraine. They're talking about how they did a whole symposium on how they have to rebuild Ukraine because it's been decimated after the war. So we have to send a lot of money and a lot of support to rebuild Ukraine. Sounds kind of like building back better. Mm-hmm. Tear it down first. And then,
which is an alchemical ritual.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And then they're going to rebuild it so that it can be the hub, the centralized hub of this AI world society, where the offshoots will be all of these 15-minute cities, smart cities, C40 cities, and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it's really this idea that everything is one and that humans are objects. They talk about how we're objects in the AI world society. And so we really have no personal sovereignty anymore.
That's so crazy. But
I was going to read how this was another quote I found from Blavatsky, Lucifer, Volume 1. And she talks about how it is diametrically opposed to Christianity. Mm-hmm. So she says how they can accept all religions, but they accept that it opposes Christianity.
But it's so weird because their Messiah is called Christ, but they're like, not that Christ, our Christ.
Well, and this is really interesting because you're seeing this right now, too. And this is very deceptive, which they're masters of deception. But you're seeing a lot of people talk about things like Christ consciousness, mm-hmm. right? This is not Christ consciousness the way that Christians think about, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. They think of Jesus Christ as being one of the ascendant masters and that he's inside of you mm-hmm. and that we are all one and there is no individual. But they're using this term, and I think it's really a nod to the initiates, but because it sounds Christian, and I'm seeing so much of this, this umbrella of Christianity but it's really a mystified, mystical version of Christianity. And I think that the purpose is to mystify the masses in order to bring them towards this interfaith integralistic movement. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing so much of it. I think Jordan Peterson's arc is an example of this. Mm-hmm. I did a show on that. I called it "Is Jordan Peterson's Arc the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship the dialectical right arm to build weft dreams?" You know, a little play on words.
I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to trust anyone mm-hmm. because yeah. I've just been the conspiracy theorist tinfoil hat for 20 years. So anybody yes. who makes it out in front and starts these movements that are very popular, I'm automatically skeptical of them. I'm not saying they're evil people or doing nefarious no. things. I'm just saying this is weird. Warning. Like, warning. You know, my spidey senses are tingling when, you know, people are converting to Catholicism, even though they've been talking about, you know, different orthodoxy for a long time. And because obviously the Catholic Church is fully on board with all of yes. this amalgamation of religions. The Pope is, yes, we are doing this. I'm kissing yes. the feet of, you know, women and Islam and whatever. He's got Pachamama on his robes and just yeah. a clown mask. So, and all of this stuff is coming from weird Tibetan voices. Okay. Yeah. Blavatsky, she claimed that she would come downstairs and pages of her books would just be written, like typewritten for her when she woke up. Okay.
Yeah.
So this sounds like
channeling.
Yeah. So maybe she was automatic channeling. I don't know. It could have been other people doing manuscripts for her. Who knows? Because the con is wrapped up in the demonism. So it's hard to pull those two things apart. Right.
Yeah. I think it's really hard. Well, the reason I brought up the Ark is just because they're doing it very much under the umbrella of it being Christian. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a dialectical arm because, you know, they've been very successful from, you know, that, I don't know how else to word it, but people who identify on the left, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's a false construct, but people who identify and associate that way have been very successful at creating subversion. But now they're appealing to, you know, the other side, who is a more religious kind of, I mean, they might align more conservative, more on the quote unquote right. And they're using that umbrella. And I think it's just, it's a way to lure people in, because when you actually listen to what they're saying, it's very mystical. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, this is a whole tangent, but I mean, I can show you the funding arm. Is they claim to be counteracting and combating the World Economic Forum, but their funding comes directly from people whose clients are the World Economic Forum. So that's a little questionable, but you know.
That's the thing about these people. There's backup plans to backup plans to backup plans. And they just kind of like throw money at all these things and hope one of them sticks. And sometimes people don't even know who they're working for.
No. And that's what, like you said, you don't necessarily, you know, pin him as necessarily the bad guy. Sometimes people don't know, yeah. but the money trail, when you follow it, it's like, okay, so you're somehow going to compact the World Economic Forum. But mm-hmm. meanwhile, the people who are funding you, are their number one client is the World Economic Forum. So it's very questionable.
Yeah. But, speaking of money and Tibet, I want to remind you guys that great seal on the dollar bill, the one with the pyramid that everybody's like, Illuminati, that comes yeah. straight from Tibet. Also from Nicholas yes. Roerich and telling the vice president that this is what we're going to have as our magical sigil for our $1. And that's why the dollar bill has never changed from then to now, is because that's their spell. And mm-hmm. so Alice Bailey, she worked for this Tibetan guy, right? The yes. voice for 27 years. And what they're saying is the hierarchy that has always been
all cool, but she called him DK.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hierarchy was taking steps to come closer to humanity, to restore the ancient mysteries of Babylon and Egypt.
Yeah.
And so Bailey's teachings became the complete spiritual foundation of the United Nations. Blavatsky and Bailey both were avid trance channelers.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these predictions of the Lord Maitreya, or the new Christ, the Antichrist, yes. instead of Christ, yes. who they called Atreyu. Does that sound familiar?
Yes. Atreyu?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of something else. No.
Remember that movie, Neverending Story?
Oh, interesting.
And the little boys call Atreyu?
Yeah.
And at the end, she says, you have to give me a new name or I'm going to die. That, remember at the climax where he has to yell out her name in the storm? And do you remember what he yells out as her new name?
No.
Moonchild.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I've never put that together. Interesting.
So the Neverending Story is this like kind of theosophical, Gnostic.
It is.
Fantastical. Allegory. Right.
Yeah.
And because people are like, this is weird. You know, when you watch something as an adult, you're like, these things are creepy and disgusting. And like the snail man and the rock eater and the wolf. And like, I don't know if I'd let my kid watch that. It's pretty creepy.
Yeah. I haven't watched the Neverending Story. I mean, in really long time. I don't really remember it. So it'd be really interesting to watch it now.
The symbol on the book is like two snakes doing an infinity Ouroboros. Remember that?
No.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to have to go look at the Neverending Story. That's crazy.
Also, Wizard of Oz is a theosophical fairy tale.
Yes, that I do know. Yes.
Yeah. So you've got these predictions of, you know, they tried to make Krishnamurti into this thing, but he, like you said, he didn't want to. It turned out to be a nothing burger. It didn't work out. Yeah. And then you've got the Lucius Trust, the fulfillment of the divine plan. And you have World Goodwill. They use their,
that's the other one. Yeah.
Yeah. Their main, focus is meditation and how to get the world to meditate, because this is the way that everybody is going to be linked up to the world, religion, is by meditation.
Yeah. And this is part of why, like I was saying about things like ayahuasca and the psychedelics. Mm-hmm. Because this is it puts people into a trance, like a meditative like state, and so then they can, you know, channel or, you know, yeah, hypnotize them or whatever.
Like Terrence McKenna, and take the mushrooms, and the mushrooms tell you there's too many white people, and you know, all of these crazy things that they're trying to bring about. So the meditation, they actually have, you know, what they call the meditation room.
Yeah, with the black magnetic box, and it has all of the 666 numerology. Yeah, I don't know how to say. It's a black cube essentially, but it's a magnetic box. I don't remember the exact dimensions, but it had a lot of 666 reference. Yeah,
it's from Sweden. We talked about that, I think, in the Beyonce live stream that I did. Either Taylor Swift or Beyonce, we're talking about the UN meditation room. But let me read this real quick, and then we'll go back to that. So they think that they have a deeper understanding of a sacrifice made by Lucifer. So it wasn't Christ that gave the sacrifice. It was actually Lucifer sacrificed himself by becoming a fallen angel to bring enlightenment to humanity. And they view Lucifer as one of the solar angels, those advanced beings who Theosophy says descended through the fall from Venus to our planet eons ago to bring the principle of mind to what was then the animal man. So they have some really weird ideas about evolution. I'm going to get to that in a second. In the theosophical perspective, the descent of the solar angels was not a fall into sin, but rather an act of great sacrifice, as is suggested in the name Lucifer, which means light bearer. So Lucifer gave the ultimate sacrifice for our spiritual development as a species. And like I said, a large portion of their philosophy relies on meditation. They have a monthly moon meditation meeting, and they're scheduled under the corresponding zodiacs for that particular month during the full moon. I think I have a chart of that right here. I mean, it's just a calendar of their, here it is, the 12 spiritual festivals of the UN. Right there. You probably can't read that, but you know, that's their schedule right from the UN. We're doing moon meditation in Sagittarius. Yes.
From the UN.
Yeah. Yes. So the meditation room is the creepiest shit you've ever seen. I don't know if there's a picture. Oh, okay, here's a picture of it. Okay. We talked about this in an article I did called The Goddess and the Baby Eater, but there's a picture of that cube.
Yes, the cube, right? The black cube. Black cube. They do say it's magnetic.
Uh-huh. So it's like a black stone altar, and it looks a lot like the Kaaba stone. They say that the goddess Diana was worshipped in the form of a stone that fell from heaven, and they even talk about this in the Bible in Acts 19. And if you know anything about Islam and about the Kaaba stone, it is the black cube, but in the cornerstone of the black cube is some kind of space rock in like a space vagina, right? That's the only way I can describe it, okay?
Yeah.
Space pussy has this rock inside it, and that's their like most sacred relic. And this goes back to the worship of Diana, or you know, the goddess.
Mm-hmm.
What was I going to say about that?
Well, this is maybe while you're thinking of it, I'll just share that this is so important because this is the religion they're talking about, the Gaia religion, the Mother Earth.
That's why I need a moon on the flag of Islam, a moon and a pentagram. Because for the right?
That's right. Yeah. And they're talking about this in all these, that's what they're using to usher in this whole like climate religion. You know, they're talking about how we have to save the planet. And it's really the religion of Gaia. It's the theosophists talk about this too. And it does go, you know, Blavatsky talks about it, but it does go way back. That, you know, the Neoplatonists talked about it as well. How instead of Earth being a divine creation of the creator, they say that it is the God. Nature is the God.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear all of these people at the UN, the World Economic Forum, all of these different cults, because they're not the only ones. There's these, you hear Oprah, you hear these groups. There's this group called like the World Evolutionary Leaders. Like Deepak Chopra's in it, and like Barbara Max Hubbard, and they talk about the evolution of humanity to this, you know, this collective consciousness, and they talk about how nature is God. So yeah,
well, they also believe nature. Yes, nature is God, and that is Pan. And so when we were doing Hidden mm-hmm. Dangers of the Rainbow, we were talking about Findhorn. I don't know how you pronounce. Some people say Findhorn. Some say Findhorn.
Yeah. Oh, but Findhorn. It's F-I-N-D horn. Yes.
Yeah. So these people literally think that the vegetables were talking to them.
Yes.
Like cabbages told them that the God is nature and all. And they met with Pan in the forest. And then they like make up these religions that become recognized by the UN, like from talking vegetables. And so the black stone in the meditation room is dedicated to the unknown God, or the God of all.
Mm-hmm.
God and of then all. That creepy mural has 72 geometric figures, which correspond to the 72 names of God in the Kabbalah.
This is super interesting to me. I've just started to look into Kabbalah. I actually don't know a whole lot about it, but it seems that there are different iterations of Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lurianic Kabbalah was in the 1600s, completely kind of like mystified the original Kabbalah. You might be more familiar.
Yes, they have. It's like the Freemasons, you know, their lore, they can kind of like attribute it back to the beginning of time, or like the fall of the Tower of Babel, or the building of Solomon's Temple, or the Knights Templar, or the this and that. So they're always trying to link their practices back to the ancients, which they can, but it doesn't come through perfectly preserved. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it looks like they totally mystified it. It doesn't look like it's the original at all, actually. Yeah.
So, the Kabbalah as we know it, that's more of like a Spanish, like you said, like I feel like in the 1500s is when this all started
okay. I know Lurianic was in the middle 1600s.
Okay.
Lurianic, yeah.
So, yeah, it's Jewish mysticism.
Yeah.
It's magic that they say started with King Solomon
mm-hmm.
and his ability to control the spirits of nature with magic words and magic rings, and with the help of his pagan wives, building all different shrines to different gods and goddesses.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's link to Kabbalah right there. And then the room itself, the meditation room, is 33 feet long. So that's a Freemasonic number. Yes. And in the shape of a trapezoid. So if you study geometry in occultism, you're going to learn that the trapezoid is something called a frustum. So this room is in the shape of a trapezoid, and the truncated pyramid with the point cut off, that mm-hmm. is a trapezoid, right? Because it doesn't make a point to God, and it's cut off from God. So that is the symbolism of that. And that's why Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan, even made a special appendant body called the Order of the Trapezoid, because it attracts evil, basically.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
very creepy.
That's not the only creepy thing. So we're going to talk about the mural in a second, the other mural in the other room. But the UN is a reversal of the Tower of Babel to the one world religion of Babylon. So back then, the languages were separated, and the people all had to go their own way. This is the great coming back together of that working. And then you hear things like love and light and all of these buzzwords, right?
Yes.
These are straight from the UN. And
when you go on the Lucius Trust website, you see, I mean, they have the pyramid, and then the word light, and you see a big light emanating. And they talk, and this is, it is the nod to Lucifer, as you said, the light bearer. Uh-huh. They talk about, Blavatsky talks about this too, how, it was because, you know, it was really the reason Lucifer really is the God is because that God trapped them. This is, again, a very Gnostic view, you know, that, but Lucifer was really trying to help man in the garden, and so therefore he's really the God. And it's this idea that through logic and reason and intellect, you know, gnosis, essentially the Greek word for gnosis, that we can not only have access to the esoteric wisdom, but through that they essentially believe they can become gods.
Exactly.
It's the perfectibility of man.
And so yes, they can become these ascended masters and go up and float in the Himalayas with their legs crossed and, you know, meditate in the mountains.
Yes.
But they have three goals for humanity. One is the reorganization of the world religions, because they think they are out of date. Number two is the gradual dissolution of the Orthodox Jewish faith. So this is weird, because you see these wars getting fomented. And this is why, in part, we have the conflicts that are going on as we speak in Israel and Palestine, because the UN and Great Britain promised that land to two different people.
Yes, they did. and they promised both sides the same thing.
Yeah.
That's slight conflict. Yeah.
So because they think that, and this led to the ideas that became the Holocaust. Also, they think that the Jewish people have some kind of soul debt that they have to pay. Yeah. And so therefore they deserve to be oppressed and exterminated because they are not one of the good root races.
Right.
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 So then, that's their second goal. Their third goal is the preparation for revelation. And this is the revelation of, like, probably AI.
I think it is AI. I think that's what they're using anyway. It's hard to, you know, this is where it gets a little bit tricky, because it's hard to extrapolate, again, the con from the belief and the actuality. Because I think in some ways the theosophy is a tool. It's a tool for them to get everybody under this one umbrella, but also to convince people that it's for the better good of humanity, because really it's, you know, we're not Well, we love everyone. All is light, all is love, and there are no differences between us. And you hear them say this over and over again. They're, you know, we're all the same. We're way more alike than we are different. And you hear this at all of these different, whether it be the UN, the World Parliament of Religions, they talk about this. It's so interesting. You hear how we're all so similar. Mm-hmm. And so, so we need to, you know, dissolve all the boundaries. And they keep saying this over and over again, dissolution of boundaries. So it's hard to say whether or not, but AI does do that, right? So it's hard to say whether or not it's really using this one world religion as the tool, as the conduit to be able to usher in their enslavement mechanism, which is this AI prison. And it's a prison. I mean, they lay it out very clearly. Mm-hmm. It really is a prison. And they call human beings objects in this AI world society. So,
well, they have some weird ideas about evolution. I have this written down somewhere, but if I come back to it, but they think that people evolve from like mineral to animal to
mm-hmm. people, right? Yes, they do. And this is part of their reincarnation.
Yeah.
So depending on how, and a lot of this again is through gnosis, because they believe if you were able, you know, you had enough, Blavatsky talks about Jacob Boheme and it like praises him, how he was this, you know, basically he was an apprentice to a shoemaker and, you know, he didn't have a lot of formal education, but because he was able to channel the ascendant master, he got it a little bit wrong, she said, because in the end he actually subscribed more to Christianity. He was a little bit too beholden to the Christian tenets. And so he got it wrong, but because he was such a great mystic, I'm paraphrasing, I could pull out the actual quote, but he says, because he was such a great mystic and because, you know, he channeled and that, you know, therefore he was, you know, he was to be lauded and praised. And this is what you see repeatedly. I just see this throughout, that it's, they want to use this, the mystification as a way of kind of pulling the wool over. So again, it's just, it's really hard to, you know, separate the con from the
demonism.
The demon.
Yeah. So there's a good quote here. Author of A New World Religion, William Jasper, describes the UN. And he says, it's a weird and diabolical convergence of New Age mysticism, pantheism, aboriginal animism, atheism, mm-hmm. communism, socialism, Luciferian occultism, apostate Christianity, Islam, Taoism, Buddhism, Hinduism, a strange admixture of crystal worshipers, astrologers, mm-hmm. feminists, mm-hmm. environmentalists, Kabbalists, human potentialists, Eastern mystics, pop psychologists, and liberal clergymen, one would normally associate with the offbeat sandals and beads counterculture of the 1960s. But today's worshipers in this rapidly expanding movement are as likely to be scientists, diplomats, corporate presidents, heads of state, international bankers, and leaders of mainstream Christian churches.
Yes, well, that's so true. Where is that from?
This is from William Jasper, author of A New World Religion, describes the UN.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I see over and over again. And they're using it to, you know, it reminds me of the whole creation of the field of social science. They try to legitimize it through, you know, methodology. Mm-hmm. But essentially, it's all the same. It all goes back to, you know, mystical occultism.
And then they try to graft in like pop psychology and pop philosophy, like, you know, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, or what else am I thinking of? Deepak Chopra.
Well, Deepak Chopra is one of these world evolutionary leaders. Yeah. And they think that they're going to evolve humanity. So in this World Parliament of Religions, one of the leaders I was talking about was Robert Mueller, and he talks about this a lot, how you know, he's so inspired because he's seeing that humanity really is evolving, and that, you know, we're just not there yet, but we're evolving because more people are, he doesn't use these words, but essentially because they're subscribing to these philosophical principles, and so the people who are enlightened are evolving to the next stage of humanity. And it's part of this humanity that's going to be all one.
Yeah. So from the theosophical perspective, some of the humans have evolved and ascended to godhood. And in the future, that's what I'm talking about. You are either going to evolve and be spiritual, not religious.
Right.
Or you're going to be recycled. And then they think that, you know, they can progress through the four lower kingdoms, what they call it, the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, and the human, and become some kind of master. So it says occult beliefs in evolution are different than Darwin's theory. The mystery school teach man evolved from mineral all the way to human. Mystery teaching believes Adam and Eve were in the animal state when the serpent set them free with knowledge that evolved them into humans. Now, this also reminds me of 2001 Space Odyssey.
Okay.
Where the monolith comes down to the ape men. And that is a allegory for the next quantum leap in evolution. Technology is the monolith or the television or the movie screen, rather. and this is what's injected into humanity to force another step in the evolution. Right?
Well, that's what they're saying, human 2.0, right?
Yeah.
And that's the transhumanism, the human 2.0.
Yes, transhumanism and the, what's it called? The singularity.
The singularity, which the AI World Society is literally creating the singularity. Literally creating the singularity, yeah.
So this hierarchy that they talk about, just a fancy name for probably hierarchy of demons, right? And
it seems that way. Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're the masters of wisdom. They're the fancy lords. They're called the Lords of Liberation, who reached the advanced spiritual thinking, and their minds are rightly focused. And then they have something called the Rider on the White Horse from the secret place, reached by those whose hearts are rightly touched. And these are the things that you get in touch with when you're meditating. And then they have something called the Lord of Civilization or Master R, who you can contact and stand with masked intent. And so these beings, also Tiny Mustache Man and other occultists, report having contact with them. And they say when they come, the I was bleeding out of my nose and my ears, and I felt like I was going to puke, and, you know, it's not good.
Right. But, yeah, they keep summoning them.
Well, you know.
There's, so the Theosophical Society is still in operation today. Yes. And they have their, the Theosophical Society in America, they say that they have their, they have a vision, they have a mission, and they have an ethic. Their vision is of wholeness. It inspires a fellowship of united in study, meditation, and service. This is what you're talking about with the meditation. They have a mission of encouraging open-minded inquiry into world religion, philosophy, science, and the arts in order to understand the wisdom of ages, respect the unity of all life, and help people explore spiritual self-transformation. This goes back again all the way to the ancient mysteries when they, where they believed, I'll just read this, because they believed that the deity was an absolute principle, transcendent, indescribable, and incomprehensible. So they believed that if the soul is immortal and of divine origin, then theurgy, the divine work, would be the art of total self-transformation and transvaluation of all experience. And so therefore transform human nature through light, the sacred light that it reveals. And this is, you know, the
light of Lucifer, which is the light that they show you when they take off your blindfold at the end of the third degree of masonry, and you've been resurrected by the grip of the lion's paw, and now you're looking at the blazing star, the pentagram, and you've seen the light.
Yes.
So this is the light of Lucifer. And yeah, they're talking about bringing about what they call the kingdom of God. But they think this is the appearance of soul-controlled men on Earth. And then the spiritual hierarchy can be deduced and the normality of existence emphasized. And the people with good sense will testify to the fact that the presence of those who have achieved this goal. So it's just probably the computer will decide.
Well, they say that in the AI world society, they say that the computer is going to make all the decisions because we won't have any governing bodies of humans. So it's all going to be determined by AI. They say that they've laid it out. So the name of the book is Remaking the World, the Age of Global Enlightenment. So that's actually the blueprint that they're using. That's the name of the white paper that Michael Dukakis wrote. For governor of Massachusetts. It's done with in conjunction with Boston Global Forum. Anybody can download it. You just have to give up an email. But I feel like just the name alone, if that's not a nod to the new age and a theosophical movement, right? It's the age of global enlightenment. That's what they're ushering in with their AI world society.
Right. So they say that these certain spiritual masters, they are born, live, and die among us, and they change the world through their teachings, which you can access through meditation. And then starting this all like kicked off, according to them, heavily in 1860, like we were talking about right before the Civil War. And then the return, they say the time has come for the return into recognized physical expression of the Christ, leading to the definite restoration of the mysteries. That certain of the senior members of the hierarchy will appear and take outer and recognizable physical control of world affairs. That sounds really ominous and creepy.
Yes, it does. It sounds scary. It sounds like what we're seeing. I mean, that's what we're seeing.
We're
seeing completely take full control. And they're doing it under the guise that this is good for us because they're enlightening us and they're doing it for the betterment of man.
Yes. And I don't think the Blavatsky and them could have envisioned the kind of technocracy that we have. No. But that's what led up to it. It says they will appear in office of some kind or another. They will be the current politicians, businessmen, financiers, religious teachers, or churchmen. They will be scientists and philosophers, college professors, and educators. They will be the mayors of cities and the custodians of all the public ethical movements. So you think these things just spring up organically, right? Do you think Rosa Parks just decided, like, I'm going to, you know, sit up front in the bus that day and like start civil war? No, that thing was a stunt, right?
Yeah.
They had to go back the next day because they didn't get it right the first day. And so that they have the people there and the media and everything. Everything is a freaking con and a stunt, you guys.
It is. So their ethic, and this applies to that, they have an ethic of holding that every action, feeling, and thought, an effect of all other beings, and that each of us is capable and responsible for contributing to the benefit of the whole. That's one of their primary ethics. So, of course, they would create stunts that are, because they believe it's all part of the machine, right?
Well, God is everything, so you can't create or destroy matter or whatever. It doesn't matter really what you do.
Right. Yeah, so there was a quote about that too, about how this is where some of them do differentiate a bit about where the descending into matter versus what matter is. So of course, you know, humans are that part of the human journey is that we descend, we fall into matter, but that's the theosophical journey is to return to the one. So Blavatsky said that, you know, that doesn't it's not necessarily a bad thing, but that's part of our journey. But some of the other theosophists said that, you know, that's our fall because we're part of matter.
Yeah, exactly. You were talking about the Neoplatonists. And so, yeah, the return to the monad is their goal.
Right.
So there will be a new type of political guidance. There's going to be a new religion. Orthodox Judaism will disappear, according to them. The Buddhism will spread. Christianity will be in upheaval, and then comes the restoration of the mysteries, and this falls into three phases that correspond generally to the three degrees of Masonry. So we've got number one, the stage of general recognition of light in all departments of human being. There's your love and light, man. It's just all love and light, man. Right?
Yeah.
And then number two is the stage of complete economic reorientation. So this is going on right now with the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum and digital currency and mm-hmm. the devaluation of all currencies because they want that all to be in control of AI.
Yep.
Right. And then the third stage is the reward of light. Received and the reward of service rendered, spiritual status is recognized through the medium of what is regarded as major initiation. So there's going to be an event that causes everybody to become initiated in the new world, to be a new world citizen. They've been talking about this in sci-fi forever. Yes. I'm thinking of what's that one with the bugs, the
ants.
No, that goofy sci-fi movie with they go off world to kill bugs. Anyways.
Okay.
The audience will know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But in the beginning, they're like, are you a global citizen? And yeah. It's a commercial. And it's like, you have to join the army to go fight the bugs on other planets to get your global citizenship.
Well, that's in all of the literature. They talk about the global citizens. And when you look at when we were talking about like UNESCO and the education, they talk about that back then too. This is like, you know, like very much in the 80s, but even they use different terminology, even all the way back in the early 1900s and the 1800s. And they talk about how they need to train, you know, later they say they want to put every child into the computer, but mm-hmm. essentially it's that they are figuring out their data mining so that they can train children so that they can be part of the like world organization. And it essentially it's like a world corporation, right? And so they need to figure out how, like the way the military does, right? They test you and then they train you for how you're going to operate in the machine. And they were very explicit in their documents about education that they were going to do this for children. Well, but this global citizenship literature is like, I mean, that's in everything now. Yeah.
Starship Troopers was the movie that I was thinking. Okay. So that's a classic sci-fi. And then what you just described sounds a lot like Ender's Game. Have you heard of that one?
Okay. I don't know.
So Ender's Game is about my movies. Training. Well, it was an old sci-fi book. Training children to fight in the military via video games. And they take the most talented children that score the highest in the video games, and then they are the ones who control the weapons in the remote war. And the end of the book, you think that the kids are just playing video games, but you come to find out they were actually fighting a real war, and they didn't know that they were actually killing people. They thought they were playing a video game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's very, that's total predictive programming.
Yes.
Because for the AI world society. And when you talk about how they're going to initiate people, I mean, that's exactly what I see. They're figuring out all of these different ways you have to opt in to everything. But I think the religion, this theosophical religion, is a way that they can lure people because it's under the guise that they're tolerant, they're accepting, you know, and that you can keep your religion, even though that's really not true because it's going to be a dissolution of all religions. It's good. So they blur it and they, you know, they mystify it so that you lose all the essence of what your religion actually is. And I'll read the quote from Blavatsky because she specifically says it is antithetical to Christianity. And she says, the Christian reader is no doubt aware that theosophy is not a religion, but a philosophy, which is both religious and scientific, and that the chief work so far of the Theosophical Society has been to revive each religion in its own animating spirit by encouraging and helping inquiry into the true significance of each of its doctrines and observances. Theosophists know that a deeper one penetrates into the meaning of the dogma and ceremonies of all religion. The greater becomes the apparent underlying similarity until finally a perception of the fundamental unity is reached. This common ground is no other than theosophy, the secret doctrine of the ages. diluted, distinguished to suit capacity of the multitude and the requirements of the time, has formed a living kernel of all religions. And then she talks about the Theosophical Society as branches respectively composed of Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims, Zoroastrians, Christians, freethinkers, who work together as brethren on the common ground of theosophy. And it is precisely because theosophy is not a religion, nor can it for the multitude supply the place of a religion. The success of its teaching has been so great, not merely as regards to its growing membership and extending influence, but also in respect to the cultivation of the sentiment of compassion, wisdom among human beings on the globe. We theosophists believe that religion is a natural incident of man's life in his present stage of development, and that although in rare cases individuals may be born without religious sentiment, the community must have religion. So they understand that this is part of why I think, you know, they use it as a tool, because they say like the future is religious and that human beings are intrinsically religious. Mm-hmm. They can use that to guide people towards their religion and their goals. Under the penalty of social decay and material, that is to say, it's a uniting bond under the penalty of social decay and material annihilation. We believe that no religious doctrine can be more than an attempt to picture our present limited understandings in the terms of our terrestrial experiences. Great, and the spiritual truths, our normal state of consciousness, we vaguely sense rather than actually perceive and comprehend, and a revelation. If it's revealing anything, we must necessarily conform to the same earthbound requirements of the human intellect. So then again, it's this idea that it's a only
fire in the minds of men.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And then I'll see if I can get to the end of it where she says, this is where she says, so far as Christian doctrine, so we'll skip ahead. So far as the Christian doctrine goes contrary to those ethics, right before that, she said, so far, a modern Christianity makes its claim to be the practical religion taught by Jesus. Theosophists are with heart and hand, but the historical truth about the Gospels is another issue. So far as the Christian doctrine goes contrary to these ethics, pure and simple, theosophists are its opponents. Any Christian can, if he will, compare the Sermon on the Mount and the Gospels with the dogmas of his church, the spirit that he breathes it in, with the principles that animate Christian civilization, govern his own life, and he will be able to judge for himself how far the religion of Jesus enters into Christianity and how far, therefore, he and the theosophists are agreed. But professing Christians, especially the clergy, shrink from making this comparison. Like merchants who fear to find themselves bankrupt, they seem to dread discovery of discrepancy in their accounts, which could not be made good by placing material assets as a set off to spiritual liabilities. The comparisons between teachings of Jesus and the doctrines of the churches has, however, frequently been made, and often with great learning and critical acumen. Both of these would abolish Christianity, and those who would reform it, and the aggregate result of the comparisons goes to prove that in almost every point of the doctrines of the churches and the practices, Christians are in direct opposite to the teachings of Jesus, because they think Jesus is the ascendant master.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, where I'm if without reading this entire thing, but she makes the point that it was she ends it with saying that Christianity has no esoteric foundation known to those who profess it, you know, and this is why it's directly opposed to theosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
To them, religion is then recognized as an attitude governing all phases of human experience. It's not what we know of it now. And then their first great initiation will be objectively staged, and the general public will recognize it as the major rite and ritual of the new religious institution of the period. And like you were talking about, they need to destroy Christianity, the traditional Christianity.
Yep.
And they're talking about the method that they're going to use to do this is the infiltration of false teachers. Now, Jay just did a super funny stream yesterday about all of the like clown church circus converts that are making Christianity look ridiculous. And I recommend you guys go watch that. It was really good, covering all of the hot button topics that have been going on Twitter this week. So, yeah, it was really good. But yeah,
I have to check that out.
Make the church as goofy as possible. And we were talking about this today, you know, not a lot of Christians are aware that we have sacraments that are holy. And that's why you have to have a gimmick at your church every week, because to keep people coming back, you know, you got to punt the Bible on Super Bowl Sunday, or you got to wear a pink sweater on Easter, or you have to like fly down with angel wings on and fog machines and light laser shows and rock concerts and stuff, because you don't have the essence of the sacraments of what's holy and what keeps you going to church. So yes, all of these false teachers, and I'm including just crazy, you know, TV evangelists is one of those. Remember those?
Oh yeah.
Crouch and what's the other guy? Jim Baker, Tammy Faye Baker, Billy Graham. And now
that's who comes to my mind.
Now you're going to go
Austin, right?
Yes. Yes. Mega church is part of that. And now you're going to go to, you know, ex OnlyFans preacher church.
Oh yes. Totally.
Right.
Oh, wait. Let me read this, because this is exactly, the road to theosophy lies for you through your own religion. So this is again where you become your own God, right?
My Jesus is my boyfriend. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. we're accustomed to say the Buddhist, the Mohammedan, the Hindu, or the Pharisee. The road to theosophy lies for you through your own religion. We say this because those creeds possess deeply philosophical and esoteric meaning, explanatory of the allegories under which they are presented to people. But we cannot say the same thing to Christians. The successor of the apostles never recorded the secret doctrines of Jesus, the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, which it is given to them. His apostles alone know. These have been suppressed, made away with, or destroyed. What we have come down upon, the stream of time, the maxims, the parables, the allegories, the fables, which Jesus expressly intended for the spiritually deaf and blind, that again, to believe that it's only, you know, reserved for a few of these who have been enlightened, it looks like, by Lucifer, really, to be revealed later to the world, and which modern Christianity either takes all literally or interprets according to the fancies of the fathers and the secular church. In both cases, they are like cut flowers. They are severed from the plant on which they grew and from the root whence the plant draws its life. We were therefore to encourage Christians, as we do votaries of other creeds, to study their own religion for themselves. Consequence would be not a knowledge of the meaning of its mysteries, but either the revival of a medieval superstition and intolerance accompanied by a formidable outbreak of lip prayer and preaching, or else great increase of skepticism, for Christianity has no esoteric foundation known to those who profess it.
And so these goofy false preachers have two uses. One, to deceive well-meaning people who have faith, and two, to turn people with some kind of like skeptical, rational thinking. Like, obviously these are con men. So if that's what Christianity is, I don't want to be a part of that.
Right.
Right. So
of course. Yeah.
Dual prong attack. So they speak of this alchemical process. They are talking about a final act of destruction, which will take place when the hierarchy will be fused with humanity, and only Shambhala will remain. So let me read this little quote about the alchemical process, because if you don't take part in this initiation, you're going to be gently recycled. So just wait. It's interesting to note that the work of destruction initiated by the hierarchy during the past 175 years, they're putting that year 1775, and that's really close to 1776, the year of the Illuminati and the year of the United States.
Yep.
1775 has in its seeds as yet a very long way from germination of the final act of destruction, which will take place when the hierarchy will be completely fused and blended with humanity. This sounds like singularity stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The hierarchical form will no longer be required when this happens. The three major centers will then become two, and the hierarchy will disappear, and only Shambhala and humanity will remain. The causal body, the soul body, disappears, and only the monad and its expression, a fusion of soul and form, are left. So it's like super kooky, depopulation stuff. Are you with us? Are you fused to, are you one with us in Shambhala, or are you, you know, getting thrown in the pot?
Yes.
Right. And then out of this comes, Agenda 21, or which is now Agenda 30.
Yes.
And if you don't know what those things are, then where have you been? Can you remind us, Courtney? I'm sure you know exactly what's going on with Agenda 30.
Yes, Agenda 2030. And now they're talking about 2045 and 2050.
You know why? Because I think we're making a difference. I think they keep having to push it back because smart people are getting on here and being like, I know what you're up to.
I think so. I really do think so. I keep saying best laid plans of mice and men.
Yeah.
They lay out the plans, and therefore it's incumbent upon us to take them seriously and to inform everybody so that hopefully we can derail them. And then they just remain plans and they don't come to fruition. But yeah, Agenda 2030. So they're talking about all sorts of things like they're doing a 30 by 30 kind of plan. This is actually, so the Biden administration renamed it to America the Beautiful, because that sounds a lot better. This is what they do. They rename things, you know, they have a really good marketing team.
They have to pivot their marketing strategies.
Yeah. I keep joking. I want the UN's marketing team. but they're really good at it. They keep rebranding and renaming things. So they have it's a 30 by 30 land grab that they're trying to do, where they have a plan where by 2030 only 30% of the earth, waters, and land they want to reserve where it cannot be inhabited or used by humans. And this is a stepping stone to what they call the Half Earth Agenda. And that's just what it sounds like. It was a book written by E.O. Wilson, who is a biologist, and he talks about how half of the Earth needs to be preserved. And of course, they're not going to stop there. They want to terraform the entire Earth. They've talked about this, terraforming it to be like Mars. And I think this is so they can build their AI world society there. And they use these, the climate religion, because that's what it is. It's essentially a religion, in order to convince people that they need to buy into these plans where they need to preserve the Earth. And this goes back again to this Gaia religion, the Mother Earth that they worship. And so it's all tied into all of these, but they've already done an example of this, is like Tuvalu. So there was this island that they said that they were all going to drown. You know, it's all the elites buy all this beachfront property, but somehow the beachfront property is all going to be swallowed because, you know, we're in a climate crisis. And but anyhow, they buy these properties, and they convinced a whole island of people that they were going to drown. And they exported them to Australia. And then they told them that they could only visit their loved ones and, you know, see their home ever again through this virtual world. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I think that's kind of like a beta test for this AI world society.
What's the name of the island again?
Tuvalu.
Tuvalu.
Tuvalu with a T.
Oh, Tuvalu.
I think it's T-U.
Tuvalu.
Tuvalu.
Okay.
But there's Agenda 2030. I mean, they have pushed the, but a lot of it is about land grabs, and it is about, they want to, where we can only inhabit parts, and there'll be like no crossing zones. So there's a whole map of it, like where humans can inhabit a certain portion of it, and then other parts are like for partial use. And then there's a, you know, where it's like restricted, and then you can only cross certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way, and this is to put us into the cities. They want to push everybody into cities because they're going to make the cities smart cities. Mm-hmm. This is where I see everything going is really to build this. And you have to remember it's the UN that's doing this, right? So it's the UN centennial. So they imagine the year 2045, which is the 100th anniversary of the UN. Mm-hmm. And so this is what they're envisioning is going to be by then. Hopefully it won't be. But it's to push us all into, so the everything is done in these stages just to get us there. And they're hoping, I think by 2030, they want us already to be on these like UBIs and everything to be done under this digital currency. But I think that that's not going to be all that realistic. I mean, we're in 2024 and a lot of people are pretty awake to that. So
yeah, I think we're making a difference. So do you remember that speech by George Bush Sr. where he talks about 1,000 points of light?
Yes.
So what he's talking about are these leaders of these occult organizations. And I think you brought this one up, one of these called the New Group of World Servers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can see that right on the Lucius Trust website. Mm-hmm. And they have a bunch of videos and they talk about the festivals that the world servers do. Mm-hmm. So these are of course, you know, a good training camp for the global citizen, and they serve the world. They're citizens of the world. So, and they make it very much like a Woodstock festival.
Yes. Which
is typically how they lure people in.
Yeah. That's a big way to get young people, on board, especially if they are a little bit counterculture, a little bit non-traditional, is like these festivals and these woo-woo and the crystals and the psychedelics and all of that.
Yeah.
So do you remember they're called the Cobden Club Papers. They were leaked by Maury Strong.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
Maury Strong, leader of the Club of Rome. And
yes. He was the chair of the United Nations Environmental Program. And so they were coming out with these key points that we're talking about of Agenda 2030. The first one is that all nations have quotas for reduction.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. All nations.
So this is all nations. So, yeah. So Maurice Strong, the Club of Rome, they did the Limits of Growth document. And that was in 1972. Their 1992 Global Reformation document, they admitted that it was all propaganda. And they said it was because they needed to create a common enemy because nobody was going to buy that. I mean, this is paraphrasing, but they essentially said it was like junk science. This whole climate narrative was not predicated on anything legitimate. And they said the people were not going to get on board, but that if they created a common enemy, that they could get people to rally behind it. And so they decided that the enemy of humanity was man. And therefore, you are the carbon we need to reduce.
Yes. And they might make an addendum to that and have some kind of alien invasion, because even Ronald Reagan says, he talked about Star Wars, and he said nothing will unite the human race together better than an alien invasion, right?
Yep. What would be a greater uniter of all of planet Earth than that we have a common enemy from outer space?
Unite under Will Smith, and he can go kick some alien butt, right?
Yes.
So one of their second things was the notions of national sovereignty will be discarded. So no more borders. We're seeing that bleed, borders bleed from the south and the north and everywhere in between. I mean, I just saw a sheriff of Florida talking today about the illegal crisis, and he had all of these like charts of public enemies who are human, TRAFF, and they get free vouchers to fly anywhere.
Yes, I did hear this. Yep.
So they're literally TRAFF people.
Yep.
Who are getting free airline tickets from the government to do these things. It's getting so crazy. Okay, so the third point.
This is what all of the, you know, like those treaties were about, right? Like, you know, creating NATO, and then they tried to do the North America Treaty that didn't work. They tried. NAFTA, right? They're trying to do that. You know, I think a lot of like the EU is a, you know, one of those consortium, and they want it because that's the first step. They have to get rid of all of the the borders of each of the countries.
And have you ever seen that one of those EU artworks where it is literally like the Tower of Babel being reconstructed with the EU? I'll have to pull that up maybe.
Oh, yeah. No, I haven't seen that.
So, okay. Then they want to take possession of all the natural resources. Excuse me, like you said.
Yep.
Including private property. So we're seeing Vanguard and BlackRock and big conglomerates buy up all the single family homes in America. So you're not going to be able to own your own property anymore. And then
they're talking about this too. So they're talking, the UN is talking about creating something called a well-being economy. And this is
The happiness thing.
Yes. Huh? It's a well-being economy, and this is really a neo-feudal system. It's, you know, it's essentially communism, but it's more than that, because they're using the fascist corporate technocratic model mm-hmm. in order to execute it. But they tell us that, you know, yeah, all sorts of
what happiness. Is that? The beatings will stop when morale improves, or like, you'll, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to punish you until you're happy.
The faster we get on board with it, the happier we'll be. Yeah. Yeah. So the less abuse we'll take, we'll just comply. But they're talking about like well-being is encompassing, you know, everything essentially. And so, you know, there's the mental health, the physical well-being, and all of these things are, so of course they tie things like, racism and all of these things are tied into because it's part of the advancement of the 17 sustainable goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're creating something called a circular economy. And this is of course where they have to have a dissolution of private property in order to achieve this. So they tell us we will own nothing and be happy.
But in their own texts and in their own religion, let's just call it what it is, all people are not equal. They're just using these ideas and buzzwords to get to their goal, because they explain that not all races and people are equal. That's where we get back to the root races, the Aryanism, the anti-Semitism. He says, not all races are equal, nor should they be. Those races proven superior by superior achievements ought to rule the lesser races, caring for them on sufferance that they cooperate with the Security Council. Decision-making, including banking, trade, currency rates, and economic development plans will be made in stewardship by the major nations. So they do talk about, they want to preserve their their glorious Anglo-Saxon system of banking, insurance, and trade.
Yes.
Is that crazy?
It's crazy.
So not only are United Nations cuckoo plastic bananas,
yes,
listening to Tibetan weirdos' voices from the ether that supposedly live in the Himalayas, they also think the Aryan race is on top and they need to preserve their system of banking, insurance, and trade.
I think they just kind of cherry pick whatever serves them, though.
Yes, that is the magician. That's what the fourth floor of the Freemason is. Like, you are a transcendent above good and evil, because if all is one and we're all random mutations, then nothing matters, really.
Exactly. Yes.
Part of their ideas back then were the National Socialism, which we all know became the NAZI party. And then, let's talk about the war on children, just to wrap it up. And then we'll talk about the mural. I don't know if you've seen this. It's super creepy, but I have a little exegesis.
I can tell you, I did find from the beginning that I was looking for the three characteristics of theosophy that mm-hmm. she talked about. So okay. I think we pretty much we've kind of gone through them, but just to delineate it, it's divine human nature triangle. So mm-hmm. the inspired analysis, which circles through these angles, the intra-divine within, the origin, death, and placement of human relating to divinity and nature, nature as alive, the external, intellectual, and material. All three complex correlations synthesize via intellect and imaginative process of the mind. So this is the, through the meditation, they're able to synthesize all of these correlations and They become one with nature, and then they become the divine. And then there's the primacy of the mythic, the creative imagination, an external world of symbols, glyphs, myths, synchronicities, and the myriad, along with the image, all universal reality for the interplay of conjoined by the creative mind. When, like you were saying, that we're not all equal. I mean, they keep saying that it's only reserved for the initiates. Mm-hmm. It's like, but somehow we're all equal, except that only the initiates are, you know, privy.
Yeah, only the spiritual will be allowed in the utopia. It's not for everybody. Like I said, you're going to be offered back up to the earth.
Yes.
As a sacrifice.
Right.
Right.
And then you be recycled.
Yes.
And then access to the supreme world, the awakening within, inherently possessing the faculty to directly connect to the divine world, the existence of human ability to create this connection, the ability to connect and explore all levels of reality, co-penetrate with the human with the divine, to bond all reality and experience a unique inner awakening. This is essentially just the mystic speak for mystery school philosophy. Mm-hmm. That one can become God through the intellect. But, you know, this is crazy. So, I was doing research on Tavistock, and they've updated their website. Mm-hmm. And they call themselves an awakening organization. And they say that they're recruiting Gnostic reticulists.
Like alien reticulists? What's a
reticulous? No, I think reticulous, like, you know, policymakers, like.
Oh, okay.
Struct. So they're recruiting. These are Gnostic reticulous. It's your time. This is your time. I was like, wow, that's pretty right out there.
Yes. It's going to be a bunch of, like, weird feminists in yoga pants.
Yes.
That you have not reached your sustainable goal of spiritualism. And you cannot come into the future with us.
Yes. Right? Well, there is a cult. They call themselves the World Evolutionary Leaders, and they seem to be penetrating everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them are high up in the UN. A lot of them are, you know, political leaders. They're certainly all over the entertainment sphere. Mm-hmm. Oprah brought a lot of them on, and yeah. So.
Paulo Coelho is one of those. He wrote The Alchemist and the other that a lot of the celebrities like. Anyways,
maybe.
So, okay, let's talk about War on Children.
Okay.
So we went over the first official business of the UN, if you all remember, was to negotiate the land of Israel and Palestine as a home for the chosen people in 1948. And look how good that's going, right? Where we started and where we are. Not good.
Not good.
Then there is the United Nations is actually behind all of the woke ideology through their tanks. They are behind all of the things like the abobos and the self-abobos.
Yep.
Most importantly, they are in on the sexualization of young children through guidance for schools worldwide on sex education. Now
crazy when you go back and you look at the literature of on education going way, way back. And they talk about how, it is a religious calling to be able to have to teach this sexualization to children. It's so incredibly creepy. And they've been talking about it for a very long time. It's not new, but they had to do it in stages.
Yes. And one of these is UNESCO. So the United Nations Education, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, they were behind making sure that all the children got all their stabbies when they should. And their motto for the Stabby Children program was No Child Left Behind.
Yes. So, this is their motto for everything.
That can mean two things.
That's what
that can mean two things.
Sure, right? Sure. Right. But in their case, it's to cater to the lowest denominator.
Right. So this is
where we go. Of course, the brainchild of Julian Huxley, who was the famous eugenicist, but he was also the one to coin the term transhumanism in 1957, mm-hmm. although Max Moore is now trying to claim that title. He's arguing that he coined it. But he was also one of the founders of the World Wildlife Organization.
Mm-hmm.
They're really instrumental. They were actually one of the sub partners for, you know, I was fighting the NACs, the natural asset companies, that they were, which are coming back. But we did stop the SEC. that's awesome. I don't think I single-handedly did, but, you know, people did sound the alarm, and enough people submitted comments. And so the SEC withdrew their proposed rule. That was the Intrinsic Exchange Group, who had partnered with the New York Stock Exchange. And so just for people who aren't familiar, NACs are natural asset companies. So they were proposing a rule that the SEC would create a new category of companies, and they would put it up on the New York Stock Exchange, where you could basically publicly trade even privately owned land. And it was all done under the guise of conservation. And so you could have like a private conservation easement and not even know that it was enrolled in one of these easements. And then they could put it up on this on the New York Stock Exchange, and they would have what they call ecosystem management rights. But anyway, the World Wildlife Organization was one of the partners in this. So they're very instrumental in advancing the Agenda 2030 goals. Of course, one of the main partners with the Rockefeller Foundation. We know what their goals are. So
I'm thinking of taxpayer-funded Alfred Kinsey.
Yes.
Okay. The guy whose research,
yes,
informed where we get our public school sex education literature today. A guy who thought it was a good idea to put toothbrush up his wiener and hang himself from the ceiling by his balls and all sorts of other disgusting, crazy crap. This is the guy who traveled the world trying to get sentences reduced for sex offenders.
Yep.
Did he do
one of the like early like trans, you know, surgeries?
Oh, did he? I don't know.
I think he did do like as an experiment.
Probably. He was freak show, man. And so this is like where this is the beginning of sex ed. Okay.
Yep.
And now you have every day you have a new bonkers article, like what they're giving kids at school to do. Send them home with dildos, send them home with vibrators, send them home with porn, send them home like
so he didn't condemn them, but he didn't approve of the actual surgery. So I did think he was involved in one of these experiments, but I'll have to revisit what exactly that was. But
He had mental problems, and he died from, like, beating up his own balls.
Yes.
Right?
This is
the education. I mean, Hugh Hefner said he was Kinsey's pamphleteer, so he was a prophet of Kinsey. And this is where, the kids are getting their education. We talked a little bit about the Prussian system, and there was a whistleblower named Charlotte...
Easerbeet,
yeah.
She was amazing. She blew the whistle on the BEST program. And that was essentially like what is now being used for SEL. It was the tech ed, tech ed mm-hmm. that they're using. So right now, that's in full force, but they're using it to data mine children and then program them with the social emotional learning, which is all part of breeding these global citizens, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a complete brainwashing tool. But she was amazing. Her father and her grandfather were both members of Skull and Bones. Mm. And so she had access to the little black books, essentially the Rolodex.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave it to Anthony Sutton because they were in touch because he was doing research on the Soviets and the Cold War. And he was starting to do research on the Order of Skull and Bones and how they were involved in the education system. And so he asked her if he could have access to those books, and he gave it to her. And that was part of how he did all of his research. So,
yeah. So look this up. Her 700-page report is called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America.
Yep.
And she served as senior policy advisor to the U.S. Department of Education under Reagan. And then she uncovered what UNESCO and these others were doing. And so look up The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America by Charlotte Etherby.
This one. It is a big book.
Party has it. Whoa, yes. Look at all that blubber.
I got a used copy because nice. It's hard to find the unabridged version.
Yeah.
They have mostly the abridged versions for sale, but I wanted the full version. I've done actually a couple of shows on Charlotte and how she reveals like their plans. She talks about, she calls it Communist Core. It's not Common Core, Communist mm-hmm. Core. Mm-hmm. And she talks about the Carnegie Foundation's documents. It was called the Conclusions and Recommendations, where they talk about how they're going to implement the Common Core really to brainwash people and to create these global citizens. And so,
yeah.
On all of that. Yeah.
Another book on this topic is called Pedagogy or the Ministry of Psychological Reform by Pascal Bernardi. And this deals with the UN educational or UNESCO's role in the transformation of education worldwide from a system based on academic instruction to one which the purpose is nothing but conditioning for acceptance of a world government. Exactly like you said.
Yep. Yeah. And this comes out of I always go back to Wilhelm Wundt because it was the Americanization of Wundt. That's what Anthony Sutton calls it. Uh-huh. But it really was. And Wundt was a Hegelian. And as we explained, Hegel was a theosophist. Mm-hmm. He was an alchemist and he was a hermeticist. But the most important thing, not to get people too bogged down with, because Hegel was pretty convoluted, I think intentionally so, honestly. But the most important thing to know about Hegel is he believed that you could not have freedom without subservience to the state. Mm. So it was all about the state was God for him. Mm-hmm. And, Sutton does a really good job, I think, of actually really demystifying. He talks about, how the Hegelian dialectic was weaponized in education. And I saw this firsthand because I went to go and talk to I went to the state capitol to, lobby against school choice because, we already have school choice. Parents can choose to educate their children however they deem fit. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, in Tennessee, we actually have less freedom, parental rights, than they do in several other states. And so they don't have true homeschooling freedom for parents. And so what they're trying to do through quote unquote school choice is give you government school choice. Mm-hmm. So really they want to put every child under the government control, regardless of whether the parents are homeschooling them or not. And not long story, not so short, but essentially I tried to explain to them because what they kept telling me was they said, we're the Republicans. So we're the good guys. I don't know why you see this as a problem. They're the bad guys. We're doing good. And I said, there's something called the Hegelian dialectic. Mm-hmm. And very effective. And I started out not saying that. What I actually started off saying was, I don't really care if there's an R or a D in front of this bill. What I care about is if you're expanding the government, you're increasing the taxes, you're limiting parental rights, and you're controlling the children, and you're prohibiting our freedoms. That's what I care about. So I don't really care if it has a D in front of it or not. And you're, of course, expanding tax funding, taxpayers, funding,
yeah.
All of these things. And so then he gave me this whole thing about how they're the good guys. And I said, well, so there's the Hegelian dialectic. And he says to me, are you using big words? And we don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no.
And I said, that's okay. Let me, I won't give you the whole long thing. We'll just really the clip notes. I can do this in three sentences just uh-huh. to give you a little history lesson, And so I explained, very simply the Hegelian dialectic. And this is the really simple, just if people want the clip notes, the first thing to keep in mind is that for Hegel, the state is God. And this is, we see this, right? We see this especially through the education, right? This is Dewey. This is, of course, G. Stanley Hall, who was the mentor to Dewey. This is Cantell, all of these really instrumental people in our education system and who we get this UNESCO model from. But that's the first thing to keep in mind. The second thing to keep in mind is that he, when, you know, people hear like thesis, antithesis, synthesis, mm-hmm. but what Hegel actually said, because that was Fichte, who was another mystic, and I would argue he was a theosophist as well. Fichte was actually one of the first people to envision an idea of the League of Nations. He and Kant both did. They had different visions of it, and they called it different things. You know, one of them wanted it to be a league for perennial peace, and that's what Kant called it. That wasn't the exact name, but that's essentially what it was. It was about perennial peace, and Fichte really did envision more of what the League of Nations would be. And he influenced Hegel, but he said that he was the one who like interpreted Kant's notion of the dialectic as being thesis, antithesis, synthesis. But Hegel wanted something that was more methodical. You know, really, he wanted, he calls it a science, but it's really scientism. There's this way that he can influence the historicity of man. He wanted to be one of these world historical figures. It sounds kind of like, you know, Madame Blavatsky. They
the hierarchy.
The hierarchy, exactly. And he very much admired them. Like Napoleon was a, you know, huge world historical figure to Hegel. Like he was so impressive. What he actually said it was that it was the concrete, the negative, and then the abstract. The opposite. The abstract, negative, concrete. And the reason this is important is because this is the alchemical hermetic process. So mm-hmm. you have the abstract, which is this idea. He rejected Kant and Fichte's interpretation of Kant and also Plato's notion of dialectic because he said that it was too intellectual. It was too abstract. He wanted something that could be used as a methodology. And they're becoming gods, they're advancing history, you know, the historicity of man. And so he says that it's the concrete and then the negative, which the German word is Aufheben. And Aufheben is this very interesting oxymoronic term because it means to lift up and preserve while simultaneously canceling and tearing down. Mm-hmm. This is where we get Aufheben de Kultur, which mm-hmm. the Frankfurt School coined, right? Then I don't think I need to explain cancel culture. But it's really interesting because it is this oxymoronic. You have a shell of something, right? But they tear it down from within. And so that Aufheben is really the sublation, but you still have the elements of the earlier, the abstract concept that emerges. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it synthesizes into the concrete. They call it concretization. Mm-hmm. And this is really, it's important. When people actually look at the spiral, the Hegelian spiral, mm-hmm. it actually looks like Jacob's ladder. I think he really thought, you know, he was one of these, he's going to be this guide to the historicity of man. He's bringing you to heaven, which the early theosophists talked about. Mm-hmm. They talked about how this was they were going to be these conduits to bring you to God.
Nirvana,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I gave them the really, that's a very reductionist, simple. I think we can all understand it. And they just told me, well, we're the good guys and you're using big words. And they basically kicked me out.
Everyone thinks they're the good guy. Did you remind them the Bushes were Republicans too? Look what happened.
Yeah, we didn't go there. But mm-hmm. I thought it's really being very... I don't know. I thought it was being very diplomatic and gracious. And the rumor was that I was bad and I was not welcome back.
Oh, no, you're too smart.
They were not happy. I know. But one of the women who I was there with was like, once you started talking about the Fabians and Hegel, I was like, we're out of here. They were lost. But these are politicians who were supposedly very invested in education. You know what I really wanted to tell them? And I did say that, you know, there are many people throughout history who were not formally educated and, who have learned, they were autodidactic and have done tremendous things. Mm-hmm. But these are the people who are telling us how we should run our education system and, you know, what's beneficial for children. And apparently, I really wanted to say, but of course I did not because I wanted to be polite, but I wanted to say, well, our education system has clearly failed you.
Yeah. You know? You don't know them big words? Stop saying big words. All I know is the words lobby.
Yeah. I know lobby.
Money. I like money.
Exactly. I was just gonna say money.
I like know winning. That. Yeah.
Well, and that's just it, because it's all about these public-private partnerships. And, you know, they're getting all sorts of kickbacks. That's the only thing I conclude from all of this, is that they're getting all sorts of kickbacks to incentivize them through, because when you look at just this example, but you see this from every angle, but of course with the school choice, now they're given these voucher money. And so through that, they're specific vendors. You think they just give you like $8,000, and now they're saying, well, we'll raise it to 12, whatever. Of course, not their money. So the number is arbitrary to them. But you think they're just going to give you like a blank check and you do whatever you want with it? No, there's always strings attached. Whatever the government funds, it runs. And so, of course, they have all these vendors tied to it. And this is, of course, what you're seeing, too, through the UN, right? They're creating all of these different public-private partnerships so that essentially all these different corporations who, if you take the DEI and you take the ESG, you know, and you meet all of their various quotas, then you will get, you know, you will become elevated and you'll get all of the benefits. And yeah.
Well, speaking of government and war on children, it just came out this week that Nestle is one of the biggest lobbyists for keeping paid maternity leave down or next to nothing, because if mom's at home with the baby, she's not buying as much formula, so they're losing money. So they lobby to make the laws harder for you to stay home with your baby so they can sell more formula. They're probably like aspartame and lead in it, or I don't
know. Nestle is so incredibly evil. So when I did all of that research on the NACs, I was like trying to go back, you know, I was making the joke how I used to laugh that one day they were going to commodify the air we breathe, like somehow they were going to, but they kind of did that with water, right? They, the whole bottled water scam, and Nestle was really instrumental in that. That was a, you know, so that they could profiteer off water. And they, the NACs, that's what it's all about. It's about, they think that they're going to make upwards of $5 quadrillion through this. Yes, that's a number we can't even fathom. Like, it's just inconceivable. And they think that they're going to make that through, essentially, it's like carbon offsets and like carbon pricing. And, you know, like when Al Gore says, like, how the climate is a, you know, a huge crisis and the earth is going to end in 2 years. But even though he, you know, his home is like off, you know, the spewing the most carbon and he takes private jets everywhere, it's okay because he has bought a lot of carbon credits. And so he's actually really doing good for the planet because he's bought so many carbon credits.
And I just looked up who, because I know Nestle sponsored a ride at Disneyland, and they do. It's called Soarin'. It's like a airplane simulation ride, I guess. Okay. I knew they had to be somewhere in the Disney.
In Disney. Yeah, that's not a surprise. They were also part of, they were one of the sub partners in the Intrinsic Exchange Group. The Intrinsic Exchange Group only exists to create this lobby for the SEC and the New York Stock Exchange. But
that's so crazy. So all of these Luciferian devil worshipers who are betting on this mass initiation, let's look at the final thing I had today, which was the mural in the UN Security Council chamber where the world leaders meet. So in this little pamphlet, there's not a very good picture of the whole thing, but there's this one kind of specific area. I don't know if you can see. So it's got like a man and a woman, and then you've got like a Peter Pan Lucifer giving the fruit to the girl. You see that? And they're all in a Vesica Pisces. So the exegesis that this book has, it says the young girl and boy represent unevolved man and woman. So mankind is in the primitive state. In the occult terms, they are in the mineral, vegetable, animal state. For them to evolve, they have to know. And that's when this little Peter Pan Lucifer in the form of a boy on top of the tree of life is offering the fruit to the little girl, who then gives it to the man. He is ready to partake. His eyes are opened, and he is willing to receive this gift. And then the child, they think out in front is, well, this person believes it's Cain, which is a pretty deep esoteric study in itself, the Mark of Cain. Maybe we can talk about that some other time. But he's also holding a dove, which in the occult represents the divine feminine or the goddess or Columbia, and also the portal, which mankind comes through, life comes through, and also magic in the occult world comes through women. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, no, you can go on. But yeah, that was really interesting in one of the theosophy books. I'm going to see if I can pull it up. But one of the books that I had read, well, I don't know if I have it. Shoot. Yes, here it is. This is not the zoomed in version, but let me see. I might have it. They go through the like different types of magic of theosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, maybe I'll just do a quick search for it because it was great. I was hoping I had still had it pulled up. I left it pulled up because I was going to read it.
Theosophy is not leaving out all of the Western and Eastern mysticism. So they are, along with the major religions, they are also rolling in Hermeticism, Rosicrucianism, alchemy. We talked about psychedelics. So it's just like literally everything in this big giant stew of Lucifer. And then, did you find what you're looking for yet?
I did find it, but no, it's the wrong one. It's just so small, I can't read it. So I'm trying to find a bigger. Oh, I think I did find it right here.
Okay.
It's a book from, so I'm going to have to find what page it was.
And that's when they talk about like all is mind and mind power, and Thelema's part of this too. But you know, the mind stuff reminds me of like the Kybalion is becoming popular.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mercury magic, witchcraft. I guess witchcraft is more under like animism and folk magic. That's mm-hmm. a part of this.
Oh, that was really interesting, too, in that world of parliament, the Parliament of World Religions.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about how, like, it's giving credence to Wiccans, and that Wiccans is becoming, like, a much more popular religion, and that, you know, it's becoming much more widely accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a good thing.
The ancient religion of Wicca, which started in the 50s.
Okay, here it is. I found it. Okay, so they start with, they say, okay, so adept magician is another word for tremendous significance and invites much investigation on account of frequent application on the hand to those who've most exalted and benefit acquirements, and on other hand, to those who basely pervert their power and work wonders, which result in disaster rather than in good to others and themselves. There are four typical kinds of magic, though, but two sorts are usually referred to in popular treaties. Red magic is the superlative power exercisable only by such as have passed through the ordeal by fire, the last and greatest of the four initiations. White magic is all innocent use of psychic force, regardless of the measure or degree of power attained by whoever uses it. Gray magic is a semi-rightful and semi-wrongful exercise of the same power and is used wherever people desire and seek to cultivate psychic energy with mixed motives and for accomplishing dubious results. Black magic is simply selfish, soulless inversion of the ability and invariably recoils upon its perpetrator in consequences of intense disaster. Yeah, so they then they go on. This book is fascinating. It was from like 1896.
Uh-huh. So what's it called?
It's by Coville. It's A History of Theosophy.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So they've got all the colors of the wind in there, in the their colors of the magic. Remember that song from Pocahontas, which was a pretty new age animism movie, Disney's Pocahontas?
Yes.
And she's singing like the trees have a spirit and the rocks talk to me and the wind is a magic thing. Remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, that's a pretty theosophical song, if you ask me.
Apparently.
So.
All these things. And I think that's just it. Like, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know, right? So,
yeah.
Little kids, like, watching this, I think they just become literally entranced, right? Well, and so then they're very lured in and they have no idea.
But they're under a spell.
They're under a spell, yeah.
So, last but not least, the UN is preparing for an arrival.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sometime between 2025 and 2030. So literally next year, they say a great and new movement is proceeding and a tremendously increased interplay and interaction is taking place. This will go on until AD 2025. During the years intervening between now and then, very great changes will be seen taking place. And at the Great Assembly of the Hierarchy, held as usual every century in 2025, the date in all probability will be set for the first stage of the externalization of the hierarchy. I know you've heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
The present cycle is called technically the stage of the forerunner. It is preparatory in nature, testing in its methods, and intended to be revelatory in its techniques and results. You see, therefore, that Chohans, masters, initiates, and world disciples and aspirants affiliated with the hierarchy are all at this time passing through a cycle of great activity. So something is going to happen, according to them, in 2025. And this was written by Alice Bailey in 1946. Yes. So Alice Bailey in 1946 says something crazy is going to pop off in 2025. So stay tuned, you guys, because it's going to get weird. Infinitely weird.
It's going to get very weird.
So,
yeah.
I want to thank you so much, Courtney. You were perfect as usual. This was really fun. You're one of the smartest people I know, and you're welcome here anytime. And tell us where we can find all of your shows, because I know you have like several.
Yeah, I think I have over 500 videos now, and I think I'm up to, I'm almost at episode 400 of interviews.
Oh, wow.
I know. Yeah, a lot for the past few years. So yeah, it's at CourtneyTurner.com, and I spell my name kind of weird. It's Courtenay, CourtenayTurner.com. And that's probably the best place to find me. And I'm on social media, you know, it's pretty much at Courtney Turner, except Instagram is at Kinetic Quartz.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.